Part 3, The Elixir of Life. From Ben Jonson's The Alchemist. Mammon. But when you see the effects of the great medicine, of which one part projected on 100 of Mercury, or Venus, or the Moon, shall turn it to as many of the Sun, nay, to 1,000, so ad infinitum, you will believe me. Surly. Yes, when I see it, I will. Mammon. Do you think I fable with you? I assure you, he that has once the flower of the sun, the perfect ruby, which we call elixir, not only can do that, but by its virtue can confer honor, love, respect, long life, give safety, valor, yea, and victory to whom he will. In 28 days I'll make an old man of 80 a child. Surly. No doubt, he's that already. The adept who made the Philosopher's Stone had also made the Elixir of Life. Since it was divine and the perfect substance, the stone was eternal and immortal. Its possession restored youth to the elderly, virility to the impotent, innocence and happiness to the world-weary. It healed the crippled, cured all diseases, and resurrected the dead. The American astrologer Mark Edmund Jones says that the occultist is expected to disentangle himself from the mere superficialities about him and to strengthen his eternal matrix while doing so. He refines his personality until he has perfected the philosopher's stone, that is, the integrity of character through which he actually experiences a deathless significance among his fellows. But the immortality conferred by the stone goes further than deathless significance. The man who becomes the stone has achieved true immortality. He has escaped the burden of successive mortal incarnations by becoming one with the eternal matrix, the one life of the universe. Some of the masters, however, have chosen to remain on earth through a succession of bodily incarnations to help humanity. According to Cyril Scott, one of these is the high initiate, now known as the Hungarian Master, who lives in Europe and travels a great deal. He was once Proclus, a philosopher of the 5th century A.D., later a great English statesman and philosopher, not named, but probably Francis Bacon is meant, and later still the Count of Saint-Germain. St. Paul is now a Cretan, principally occupied in watching over the spiritualist movement. The high initiate, once known as Jesus, occupies a Syrian body and lives in the Lebanon. He was earlier the Old Testament hero Joshua. This is because Joshua was the son of Nun, and Jewish commentators believe that the true name of the Messiah would be Jai Nun, son of Nun, or son of the fish, which was one of the sources of early Christian fish symbolism. One of the most famous of all those who are supposed to have possessed the elixir of life is the Count of Saint-Germain. The Comte de Saint-Germain and Sir Francis Bacon, says Manly P. Hall, the leading light of the Philosophical Research Society of Los Angeles, are the two greatest emissaries sent into the world by the Secret Brotherhood in the last 1,000 years. The Secret Brotherhood is a group of masters whose headquarters are said to be in the Himalayas and who are attempting to guide mankind along higher paths. Saint-Germain hobnobbed with the highest social circles in France, winning the favor of Madame de Pompadour in 1759 with his Water of Rejuvenation. Immensely erudite and enormously rich, he was a skillful violinist, painter, and chemist, had a photographic memory, and was said to speak 11 languages fluently, including Chinese, Arabic, and Sanskrit. He had found the Philosopher's Stone and used it to make gold and the magnificent jewels with which his person was literally besprinkled. He was believed to be over 2,000 years old and to be either the wandering Jew or the offspring of an Arabian princess and a salamander. He delighted in reminiscing about the great ones of the past with whom he had been on familiar terms, including the Queen of Sheba and Cleopatra. He was a wedding guest at Cana when Christ turned the water into wine. There is a pleasant story of him describing a dear friend of long ago, Richard the Lionheart, and turning to his manservant for confirmation. "You forget, sir," the valet said solemnly, "I have only been 500 years in your service." Saint-Germain attributed his astonishing longevity to his diet and his elixir. The elixir survives today as Saint-Germain tea, a laxative made from senna. The diet consisted chiefly of oatmeal, groats, and white meat of chicken with a little wine occasionally. He also took elaborate precautions against catching cold. He is supposed to have died in Germany in 1784, but occultists believe that he was probably given a mock burial, as they say Bacon was. It is said that he was frequently seen alive in the next century and was known to Bulwer Lytton. Although to possess the stone was also to possess the elixir, there have always been plenty of rival elixirs and rejuvenators on the market, involving methods ranging from drinking human blood or eating vipers, strongly recommended by Madame de Sévigné in the 17th century, to inhaling the breath of young girls or sleeping with them, called Sunamitism, from the story of David and the Shunammite damsel of 1 Kings 1. The search for magical renewal of youth and vigor still continues. At a conference of the California Medical Association in 1962, it was stated that health food stores tout nostrums with magical properties to pep up the blood, improve the complexion, and instill vibrant youth, and that the American public spends $500 million a year on health foods and $350 million a year on unnecessary vitamins. Alcohol has long been a popular elixir. Until recent times, in fact, alcohol was another term for the elixir or water of life, as it is called in various languages. Aqua vitae, eau de vie, Lebenswasser, and the Irish whisca beta, now shortened to whiskey. In the early 14th century, Arnold of Villanova identified it with alcohol in the modern sense, equating aqua vini, water of wine, with aqua vitae. But the word was not widely used in its modern meaning until the 19th century. Another name for alcohol was aqua ardens, because it is liquid and also burns. It was thought to be a combination of fire and water, and so a form of the stone. Some medieval alchemists thought that alcohol was a form of the quintessence, the pure fifth element of which the heavens are made. Placed in a still which was sunk in a dung bed, the alcohol condensed in the still's projecting spout and was carried back into the still again, setting up a circulation. It then separated into two layers, a turbid lower layer, the earth or the four elements, which was rejected, and a clear blue upper layer, the sky or quintessence. What this process actually produced was almost pure alcohol. A simple alcohol elixir is Dr. Stephen's water, a 17th century cure-all and prolonger of life. Take 1 gallon of good Gascon wine and add 1 dram each of ginger, galangale, cinnamon, nutmeg grains, cloves, fennel seeds, caraway seeds, and origanum, and a handful each of sage, wild marjoram, pennyroyal, mint, red roses, thyme, pellitory, rosemary, wild thyme, chamomile, and lavender. Bruise the herbs and grind the spices small. Add them to the wine, and let the mixture stand for 12 hours, stirring frequently. Distill it, keeping the first distillate and the second and the third. This water comforts the spirits and vital parts, and helps all inward diseases that come of cold, and whoever uses this water moderately will make him seem young in his old age. Gold was an obvious candidate for the elixir because the stone was gold. The Archidoxa Medicinae, or Elixir of Life of Paracelsus, is believed to have been made from gold, and he valued potable gold as a medicine for purifying the blood and preventing miscarriages, as an antidote to poison, for keeping the devil away if placed in a newborn baby's mouth, and especially for heart diseases, because gold and the heart are ruled by the sun. A 16th or 17th century recipe says that to make potable gold, you begin with 3 pints of red wine vinegar and the ashes of a block of tin burnt in an iron pan. Mix these together and distill them repeatedly. Then heat 1 ounce of gold in a crucible with white salt. Grind the mixture of gold and salt, heat it again, and wash it with water until there is no taste of salt left. Add it to the vinegar tin mixture 1 ounce to 1 pint, and evaporate it to the consistency of honey. Dissolve it in spirits of wine, and you have potable gold. It is significant that the recipe mentions alcohol and also honey and salt, both of which prevent decay. Bacon, who was claimed by occultists as a great adept, said that the smell of earth is a tonic medicine. Quote, "The following of the plough hath been approved for refreshing the spirits and procuring appetite." Unquote. Spring is the best time for this, because the earth has spent her sweet breath in vegetables put forth in summer, or fresh earth should be turned up with a spade. Gentlewomen may do themselves much good by kneeling upon a cushion and weeding. Since the earth is the source of growing crops and vegetation, inhaling its vapors should preserve life, as Bacon hints. Quote, "I knew a great man that lived long, who had a clean clod of earth brought to him every morning as he sat in his bed, and he would hold his head over it a good pretty while." Unquote. Another eminent English philosopher, Berkeley, hoped that he had found what might prove to be a universal medicine, a substance which carried the essence of life and cured all diseases, in tar water, the dark resin exuded from pine trees and firs mixed with cold water in the proportion of 1 to 4. He learned its uses on a mission to the American Indians. In Siris, published in 1744, he says that opium, mercury, and soap bid fairest for universal medicines. But he has tried tar water successfully on various ailments, including smallpox, asthma, coughs, pleurisy, indigestion, piles, and scurvy, and believes there may be no limit to its capacities. It also preserved the gums and teeth, sweetened the breath, and strengthened the voice. Berkeley suggested that the resin contained the vegetable soul, or the luminous spirit which is the form or life of a plant. It was exalted and enriched by the life-giving rays of the sun, quote, "to become a most noble medicine. Such is the last product of a tree perfectly matured by time and sun." Unquote. 2 months after Siris was published, a tar water dispensary was opened in London, and its use as a medicine became fashionable for a while. Many occultists have speculated on the nature of life, what it consists of, or in what substance it is contained, in the hope of using an essence of life to stave off old age and cure disease. According to Paracelsus, the essence of life is contained in an invisible substance called mummia. Blood, hair, sweat, urine, and excrement all retain for a time the vital power of the body from which they come, and it is possible to make from them a microcosmic magnet which contains mummia and attracts it in the same way that magnetized iron attracts iron. If this is applied to the afflicted part of a patient's body, it draws off diseased mummia from that part. The magnet is then mixed with earth, and a plant is grown in the earth. The diseased mummia passes into the plant, and the patient gets well. Paracelsus also used magnets to cure diseases caused by an imbalance or improper distribution of the basic components in the patient's body. And much earlier, both Plato and Galen had said that disease is caused by imbalance of the body's elements or components. To cure hysteria in women, for example, Paracelsus placed one pole of a magnet above the uterus and the opposite pole of a second magnet below it, which regulated the movements of the nervous fluid controlling the uterus and restored the fluid to its proper position. For epilepsy, the negative pole of a magnet was placed on the patient's head and the positive pole of another magnet on his stomach. This arrested the flow of nervous fluid to the brain, which had caused the epileptic fit. These ideas were carried further 200 years later by Franz Mesmer and his followers. Mesmer published a thesis in 1766 in which he said that the movements of the planets affect the human body through an invisible fluid in which everything in the universe is immersed. He first thought this fluid was electricity, but he later called it the fluid of animal magnetism because it acted principally on living creatures and had magnetic properties. He believed that just as a magnet has two poles, so man is magnetically divided in two, with poles in his left side opposite to those of his right side. Disease is caused by an imbalance of animal magnetism and can be cured by restoring a proper balance between the opposite poles. This can be done by stroking the body with magnets or by sheer willpower, because the fluid of animal magnetism responds to the trained will. Mesmer went to Paris in 1778, set up a clinic, and enjoyed a great fashionable success. His patients sat round a large oak tub which was filled with water, iron filings, and powdered glass, and from which iron rods protruded. The patients applied these rods to the afflicted parts of their bodies, while Mesmer marched about majestically in a pale lilac robe, passing his hands over the patients' bodies or touching them with a long iron wand. The results varied. Some patients felt nothing at all. Some felt as if insects were crawling over them. Others were seized with hysterical laughter, convulsions, or fits of hiccups. Some went into raving delirium, which was called the crisis, and was considered extremely healthful. Mesmer's discovery that the magnetic fluid could apparently be controlled by the operator's will was the foundation of mesmerism and hypnotism. His theories have also influenced occultists and had a profound effect on Eliphas Lévi. Lévi identified the fluid of animal magnetism with the astral light, which exists in all the phenomena of the universe. It is both a substance and a force, a fluid and a type of light, and it was created by God's command, "Let there be light." Like a magnet, it has opposite poles. It carries good and evil, it transmits light and propagates darkness. The astral body is formed of it, and it can be controlled by the human will. It is the astral light, he explains in Key of the Mysteries, which is the fluidic and living gold of alchemy, and to control it is to achieve mastery of all things. Quote, "To direct the magnetic forces is then to destroy or create forms, to produce to all appearance, or to destroy bodies. It is to exercise the almighty power of nature." Unquote. The belief in the existence of an elixir of life is a reflection of the magical theory that man is potentially divine. God is eternal and incorruptible, and it follows that somewhere, if man could only reach it, immortality waits for him too.